Well, you might like to keep your Bible open there at Genesis, and there's an outline of what I'm going to be saying in the that middle of that yellow sheet. If you wanted to get that, that would probably be helpful at this point. It has been an exciting week in the news, hasn't it? I mean, it was a thrill on the radio, listening on the radio early this week, getting up, and our Mary is pregnant. To Denmark's Prince Frederik. And do you like that, our Mary? For the you can turn those lights back a bit higher. For the purpose of this illustration, I'm calling Tasmania part of Australia. Baby due at the end of October, and we were thrilled as we were driving down to Wollongong to do a conference on... it was just very, very... front page of the Sydney Morning, they've got their news values right at Fairfax, haven't they? Right across the front page, Mary pregnant. It was just so exciting, and I thought, we've got our perspective right, we've got the issues in proportion, and I was so touched by it, I started searching the web for more details, and I discovered, and I don't know if you knew this, but I didn't until this week, but Denmark has Europe's oldest monarchy, founded by the Vikings in the early part of the 10th century, and I think that Mary's pregnant raises all sorts of exciting possibilities for us Australians. We have an Australian on the throne in Denmark. We don't know yet if it's going to be a boy or a girl, but an heir to the Danish throne. 10 centuries old, this throne. And we've got Prince Bruce. I mean, that's assuming they do the right thing in the naming, or Princess Sheila. It is exciting, isn't it, to think of future Prince Bruce of Denmark? I don't know about you, but the British monarchy is so lousy that it makes me want to defect and become part of the Danish monarchy. Wouldn't you like to be a member of the Danish Empire? The Commonwealth of Denmark? Wouldn't that be terrific? In fact, I've never used my power of this pulpit before in this way, but we've got so many members of Sydney's media here tonight. Why don't we try and run that in the news this week? If we could kind of give that a bit of a run. And so what I thought we'd do is we'd have a bit of a competition. I brought along a pack of lentil soup. And so if anyone can get that up somewhere this week, in the Herald, in the Telegraph, in one of the radio stations, the idea, it's got not just the idea of Prince Bruce, not just the idea of Princess Sheila, but we're looking for the idea that Australia should switch, that Howard should put it to the Denmark people, that if you call him Prince Bruce, we'll become a member of the Danish Commonwealth. If you can get that run somewhere, just float it. So, I mean, it's not just a thing for the media people. You can get it in a letter to the editor, that counts. If you get it on a talkback show and you can tape it and bring it and we can play it next week, well, we've got a pack of Mackenzie's red lentils. What's that got to do with where we're going this evening? It's got to do with firstborn son of the monarchy. It's big in monarchy, who is the firstborn. In the British royal family, you've got, you hear that line? You've got the heir and the spare. You've got William and Harry, the heir and the spare. And that's really the way it looks in the back in the ancient world, 4,000 years ago, 2,000 years before Jesus. And the firstborn is held in special esteem in the family. First fruits of the father's strength, privileged during the parent's lifetime. And when the inheritance is divided, the firstborn gets a double share, twice as much as any of the others. Now, come with me. Start in Genesis 25. This is the passage we're going to be looking at tonight. Genesis 25, sentence 19. And you see there those first three verses. This is the account of Abraham's son Isaac. Abraham became the father of Isaac, 25:19. We're going to be working hard in the Bible tonight. You need to be able to see a Bible. If you can't see one, can you glare at the person next to you until in Christian love they feel intimidated? Genesis 25, sentence 19, this is the account of Abraham's son Isaac. Abraham became the father of Isaac. Isaac was 40 years old when he married Rebekah, daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean from Paddan Aram, sister of Laban the Aramean. Isaac prayed to the Lord on behalf of his wife because she was barren. The Lord answered his prayer and his wife Rebekah became pregnant. It sounds simple, doesn't it? Married, baby. Do you know, it's much more complex than that. See, Abraham, verse 19. Abraham, his name means big daddy. That's what it means, big daddy, but he had no children until he was 100. I mean, imagine going through life having a name called daddy, getting to 100. And then we saw that promise that was made to Abraham back in Genesis 12. Flick back to Genesis 12, just getting the context of here of where we're going tonight. Genesis 12, God made a promise to Abraham. Verse 1 of Genesis 12, the Lord said to Abram, leave your country, your father's household, go to the land I'll show you. I will make you into a great nation and I will bless you And I'll make your name great, and you'll be a blessing, and those who bless you will be blessed, and those who curse you I'll curse. God made this promise to Abraham. It was God's way of fixing the problem that had arisen between humanity and God. In that God had made the world, and the humanity had said, up your nose, God, we're going our way, we're doing our thing, get stuffed. And there's a break, there's an alienation in the relationship between God and humanity. And we couldn't fix it from where we were, and so God needed to fix it. And so what did God do? He said, I'm going to fix it, and I'm going to fix it, and the first thing I'm going to do is make a promise to Abraham. Now, how is God going to fix it? How does this promise play out as he fixes the issue? A lot of interest on who is going to be Abraham's child, the one through whom the blessing is going to come, through the blessing to the world. And a lot of interest, because of the customs of the time, on who will be the firstborn. Now, it's 100 years. Abraham's 100 years old. Sarah becomes pregnant with Isaac. Wow, at last a son who will bring God's promises. We held our breath last week as Abraham held the knife over the little body of boy Isaac and was about to kill the one through whom the promises of God were going to come. But then it was just a test, and Isaac went free. And then Isaac grows up, and there's a lot of attention in Genesis 24. Flick forward to Genesis 24 about who Isaac will marry. A whole chapter on how to find a wife for Isaac. And gentlemen, if you're looking for a wife, you do good looking in Genesis 24. Because what Abraham does is he sends one of his servants off to Tasmania to find a girl who's watering camels. Then he finds Mary in the bar at the Olympics. He finds Rebecca, and servant brings back Rebecca, and they get married. And it's a really lovely story. And chapter 25, verse 20. Isaac was 40 years old when he married Rebecca, daughter of Bethuel the Aramean, from Paddan Aram, sister of Laban the Aramean. Isaac prayed to the Lord on behalf of his wife because she was barren. The Lord answered his prayer. That makes it look simple, but in fact, they got married when Abraham was 40, and the baby doesn't come till Abraham is, verse 26, 60. That's 20 years of waiting. Married at 40, baby at 60. And yet back in chapter 24, when Rebecca was just watering the camels, 24 verse 60, they blessed Rebecca and said to her, our sister, may you increase to thousands upon thousands. May your offspring possess the gates of their enemies. There's this prediction that Rebecca's going to have bulk babies and it's all going to be on and it's all going to be happening. And she spends the next 20 years childless and miserable. Very sad, waiting. 20 years of waiting, 20 years of media speculation about is she pregnant, isn't she pregnant? 20 years about this is the one through whom the promises of God are going to come, but what is going to happen? And then 25, 21, Isaac prayed to the Lord on behalf of his wife. The Lord answered his prayer and Rebecca became pregnant. 20 years of waiting, and now it's happening. Now the baby's on the way, and there's the swelling, and there's the excitement, and it's a thrill. And what is this baby going to be like? I mean, I take it Mary's there sitting in the royal palace of Denmark thinking, what is my baby going to be like? I hope he's not like that pothead Prince Harry. Oh, God, don't give me a Prince Charles. Don't give me someone who's going to wear a Nazi uniform to a party. Oh, no, no, no. I mean, you can just imagine Rebecca there thinking, longing, what is my baby going to be like? And the baby of Rebecca will change their name to Israel. And Israel will have 12 sons, the 12 fathers of the 12 tribes of Israel. The baby of Rebecca is the one through whom the promises of God will be made. Very exciting. And Rebecca is just churning over these issues and then bang, bang, slam, stomach pains. It's just awful. And you see chapter 25, verse 22, the babies jostled each other within her. The language has been toned down a little in the English translation here. The babies in the womb are going hell for leather. It's kick, it's punch, it's struggle, it's conflict, it's war in the womb between these two little babies. And I'm not sure. I think I know you well enough to say this. When my mum was pregnant with me and I was the firstborn, my parents gave me my first nickname. And my first nickname was Booter. Because I kicked my mum a lot from my position inside the womb. And actually, it was Booter for short. It was actually Booter Pot. Must be feeling secure here if I can share that with you tonight. But now I've gone out on a limb and been vulnerable. I don't want you to laugh at me, okay? Good. And I don't want you to... Well, you can laugh at me behind my back, but please don't laugh at me about that when I'm in the room. I was thinking about that, because it must have been a big issue for my parents that I was kind of kicking, but I was pretty tame compared to these two twins in the womb, because she'd been waiting for 20 years and she wonders if it's worth going on living. It's so hard. Verse 22, she said, "Why is this happening to me?" So she went to inquire of the Lord. She's in so much pain. 20 years of waiting, now excruciating pain. Listen to what God says to her, 23. This is the key point of tonight's talk. The Lord said to her, "Two nations are in your womb. Two peoples from within you will be separated. One people will be stronger than the other, and the older will serve the younger." There's two babies, two boys, two people, but the younger one, he's the focus. The younger one is the one who'll get the blessing from God. The older will serve the younger. That is the word of God. That is the word that comes to her from God. That is what God is doing in the world in her life. It's not unheard of, God choosing the younger over the older. He did it with Abel over Cain. He did it with Seth. He did it with Isaac over Ishmael. He chose Rebekah over Leah. Joseph over all the other brothers. But the key point is, though, God chooses. Before either are born, God's chosen. This is non-merit. This is not performance-based. Not earned. God just chooses. Unilaterally chooses. God is God. God has the right to choose. Some of us, I think we choose God. We need to do a Copernican revolution in our thinking there. The earth is not the centre of the universe, the sun is. So the earth is not the centre of the solar system, the sun is. We are not the centre of the universe, God is. It is God who chooses. Two little babies born. First one, little redhead. Fatty Vorton in the making, destined to be on the footy show. So you see verse 25, the first to come out was red. His whole body was like a hairy garment, so they named him Esau. A couple of minutes out comes Jacob. Verse 26, after this, his brother comes out with his head grasping Esau's heel. He's named Jacob. The two boys grew up. Esau became a skillful hunter, man of the open country. Jacob was a quiet man, staying among the tents. So you got Fatty Vorton and Lachlan Murdoch. Actually, I was thinking about this, not Murdoch. What's Bill Gates' boy's name? Sorry? Junior. Yeah. Bill Gates Junior. And he's got a footy player, redhead footy player, and an indoorsy kind of one. And they're different. They're as different as different. And so you see 28, Isaac had a taste for wild game. Isaac, the daddy, had a taste for wild game. He loved Esau, but mum, Rebecca, loved Jacob. One's daddy's boy, one's mummy's boy. They're very different. One's older, one's younger. It's just like William and Harry, the former royal family of Australia, before we make the switch when you get this story running. And I've checked on the web, and well, this has given us this profile of Harry. And I've looked it up. Harry, a.k.a. Henry Charles Albert David Windsor, 15th of September, 84, St Mary's Hospital, Paddington, London, England, gender male. Religion, Anglican, Episcopalian, ethnicity, white, sexual orientation, straight, occupation, royalty, level of fame, famous, executive summary, second son of Lady Diana, born in London, 4:20 p.m. It should perhaps be no surprise Prince Harry was smoking marijuana at age 17. And then the key line, Harry is the spare to his brother William, heir to the British throne, the former throne of Australia. The happy prince. He's smoking pot, that's why. And so in the view of the royal family, William is the heir and Harry is the spare, and that would be the view of Isaac. But it's not God's view. God made a choice. He said the older will serve the younger. The blessing's going to go to the younger. Now, that's what God has decided. Now, we're setting the scene for this journey tonight. A little more closely at the actions of each of the characters. I'm just going to work through the rest of this narrative very quickly and focus on the central character in each part of the narrative. First Esau, then Isaac, then Rebecca, then Jacob. Esau. The big thing you can say about number one son Esau is that whatever privileges came with being number one, there was something more important to Esau than that. So 25:29, once when Jacob was cooking some stew, Esau came in from the open country famished. He said to Jacob, "Quick, let me have some of that red stew. I'm famished." That's why he's called Edom. "Stew look good, tasty red." And Jacob replied, "First sell me your birthright." God had said, the older will serve the younger. And the younger starts to negotiate for the oldest, "Sell me your birthright." "Look, look, look, 32, I'm about to die," Esau said. "What good is the birthright to me? It sounds like my children every time we go past McDonald's. I'm about to die. I'm dying of hunger there." It is a medically proven fact that no child has ever died from driving past McDonald's. Esau is a self-centred drama queen. Jacob said, "Swear to me first." Jacob is cold, calculating, ruthless exploiter of his brother. So he swore an oath to him, selling his birthright to Jacob. And Jacob gave Esau some bread and lentil soup, bonus bread. He ate and he drank, he got up and left. Now, Jacob is a rat. But Esau has his priorities way out of kilter. Verse 34, summary point of this passage, Esau despised his birthright. Esau despised the great privilege that he had. God had said it will be this way. God had said it would be Jacob that would be blessed, not Esau. But Esau has made real, independent, personal choices. And he's acted irresponsibly towards the choice that Jacob offered him. He is voting with his feet that he despises the blessing and despises Yahweh. His choice there in the kitchen is Jacob's cooking soup. It's a parable for Esau's life. If it comes to choosing a wife, does he get the wife that God wanted to happen? What's the history in the family there? Well, when Abraham wanted a wife for Isaac, he sent the servant to find the daughter of his brother who was watering camels. Whole chapter detail on how to find the wife that God approved. What does Esau do? Verse 34, chapter 26, verse 34, when Esau was 40 years old. Esau was 40 years old, he married Judith, daughter of Beri the Hittite, and also Basemath, daughter of Elon the Hittite. Verse 35, they were a source of grief to Isaac and Rebekah. Esau made his choices and ignored God. Yes, God had made a decision, but Esau makes independent decisions that actually play out to be the same as the decision that God made. Isaac, chapter 27, what Isaac does is highly irregular. Isaac would have been keenly aware that he is the son of Abraham, the treasured son, the one through whom the promises of God are to be fulfilled. He would have been keenly aware that God had made this statement that it is through Jacob that the promise is to be reckoned, that the promise is to be realised, and yet he ignores that completely. Chapter 27, sentence 1. When Isaac was old, his eyes were so weak he could no longer see, he called for Esau, his older son, and said to him, "My son." "Here I am," he answered. "I am now an old man, don't know the day of my death. Get your weapons, your quiver, your bow, go out into the open country to hunt some wild game for me, prepare for me the kind of tasty food I like, nice lentil soup, bring it to me to eat, so I may give you my blessing before I die." It would be normal in that culture for a dying father to call his children together, for a dying father to give his children their blessing, to distribute their inheritance. But it is extremely irregular for a father to call one child and not tell the other one about the meeting when it's blessing day. Isaac is planning to give everything to Esau and nothing to Jacob. And yet Isaac knows that it is God's plan that it go to Jacob. He is ignoring the direct word of God. his wife Rebecca, comes up with a plan to manipulate her husband so that her son doesn't miss out. Did you notice that verse 5 of chapter 27? Rebecca was listening as Isaac spoke to his son Esau. Then verse 6, Rebecca said to her son Jacob, "Look, I overheard your father say to your brother Esau, his son, her son." They're playing favourites, Isaac and Rebecca. Verse 7, "Bring me some game." This is what Rebecca says to Isaac. "Bring me some game, some tasty food to eat, so I may give you my blessing in the presence of the Lord before I die." Rebecca is quoting Isaac as having said. "Now then," this is Rebecca speaking, "my son, listen carefully and do what I tell you. Go out the flock, bring me two choice young goats so I can prepare some tasty food for your father just the way he likes it. Take it to your father to eat so he may give you his blessing before he dies." She's angry at her husband's disregard to the convention, calling all your children together for the blessing. But he's been deceitful and so she is deceitful. It's not a pleasant family, is it? I mean, it's almost as... well, it's the British royal family. Jacob. He raises the moral concern, saying, "Oh, Mum, don't do that. That's immoral." No, he doesn't. What's Jacob's concern about the whole thing? Jacob, the deceiver, his only concern is that he might get caught. Verse 11, "Jacob said to Rebekah, his mother, 'But my brother Esau is a hairy man, and I'm a man with smooth skin. What if my father touches me? I'd appear to be tricking him, and I'd bring down a curse on myself rather than a blessing.'" Rebekah talks him into it. He's manipulatable. No backbone here. And Jacob deceives his blind, frail father. Puts on goat's clothes, Esau's clothes, covers up his skin. He's a rat. If Esau's a kind of Paul Borton, red-haired, outdoors, sporty guy living for the weekend, patron saint of Australia, that's Esau. Jacob is a ruthless, exploiting, cold, calculating, selfish rat. A thief, a cheat, and a liar. Actually, we need to cut that one out. We've got this new website on christiansinthemedia.org, and you can listen to the talks back. So welcome back if you're listening on the web. I'm sorry, we just had to cut out that bit, and you just missed a great joke about the Pope and the prostitute. Jacob is like Ray Kroc. Ray Kroc is founder of McDonald's. I'm in enough trouble already, I might as well keep going. His business card used to say Ray Kroc, have the golden arches and say Ray Kroc, founder. But I found this quote from him. Ray Kroc said, "It is ridiculous to call this an industry." He's talking about the fast food industry. "This is not. This is rat eat rat, dog eat dog. I'll kill them, and I'm going to kill them before they kill me. You're talking about the American way of survival of the fittest." And then he goes on to say, "If my competitor was drowning, I'd stick a hose in his mouth and turn on the water." That's Ray Kroc. You think about that the next time you have this Big Mac. Jacob deceives his father. Verse 18, he went to his father and said, "My father, yes, my son," he answered, "who is it?" Jacob said to his father, "I'm Esau, your firstborn. I've done as you told me. Please sit up and eat some of my game so that you may give me some of your blessing." Isaac asked his son, "How did you find it so quickly?" "The Lord your God gave me success." Isaac said to Jacob, "Come here so I can touch you, my son, to know whether you really are my son Esau or not." Jacob went close to his father Isaac, who touched him. The voice is the voice of Jacob, but the hands are that of Esau, and he did not recognize him. His hands were hairy like those of his brother Esau, so he blessed him. Here comes the blessing. Lock eyes on this, verse 28. "May God give you of heaven's dew and the earth's riches, an abundance of grain and new wine. May nations serve you and peoples bow down to you. Be lord over your brothers. May the sons of your mother bow down to you. May those who curse you be cursed and those who bless you be blessed." Isaac gives Jacob everything. Jacob's going to be the ruler. He's going to be lord over his brothers. I mean, he was already really over Esau. And Jacob sneaks out, having got the blessing. Esau comes back to his dad. But in the rap now, his father Esau asked him, "Who are you? I'm your son, your firstborn Esau." Isaac trembled violently. "Well, who was it that came and hunted game and brought it to me?" I ate it just before you came, and I blessed him, and indeed he will be blessed. When Esau heard his father's words, he burst out loud and bitter cry, "Blessed to me too, Daddy." But he said, "Your brother came deceitfully and took your blessing." Isaac had tried to give Esau everything and mistakenly gave Jacob everything. There's nothing left for Esau. So 41, Esau held a grudge against Jacob because of the blessing his father had given him. And he plans to kill his brother as soon as his father dies. Rebekah hears of this, sends Jacob away. And he says, "I'm disgusted with living because of the women that Esau has married, the foreign women that Esau has married. Send Isaac away. Send Jacob away to get a wife for him." Jacob went and got a wife. There's a slight hint of repentance from Esau in that when Esau learns that Isaac had blessed Jacob and sent him away to get a wife, he goes and he, verse 8, realizes how displeasing the Canaanite women were to his father. He goes off to Ishmael, the relative, and gets a wife himself. Now you follow the story through. Jacob, he goes to Laban. He marries 12 sons, 12 tribes. Jacob's name is changed to Israel. Jacob the father, Israel the father of the Jews, the children of Israel. It's the Jewish people that come from this family. And eventually from the Jewish people we get to the descendant of Israel, who is Jesus, who is the Christ. And then Jesus dies to pay for our rebellion against God. And so the problem at the very beginning of the Bible, that we had rebelled against God, is fixed through this problem, through this promise to Abraham, and this step that we see tonight, working out through Isaac and Jacob. Two key take-home lessons for us this evening. One is from Jacob and the other is from Esau. The main lesson is from Jacob, and it's about God. It's the lesson from the statement of God to Rebekah when the baby boys are fighting in her womb. God said before the twins are born, "I've chosen one and not the other." And it was like that with Jacob and Esau. A few months' time, we're going to come back and do this in detail in Romans, when we get to Romans. But come flick forward with me to Romans chapter 9, and you'll see this argued sharply. So we're Matthew, Mark, up the back of the Bible, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts, Romans chapter 9. Romans chapter 9, verse 10. The Apostle Paul, writing to the church in Rome, early days of the Christian movement, fledgling Christian movement. And Paul writes, Romans chapter 9, sentence 10, "Not only that, but Rebekah's children had one and the same father, our father Isaac. Yet before the twins were born, or had done anything good or bad, in order that God's purpose in election might stand, not by works, but by him who calls, she was told, 'The older will serve the younger.' Just as it is written, 'Jacob I loved, but Esau I hated.' God, because he's God, is able to choose. Is that unfair?" Well, verse 14, "What shall we say then? Is God unjust? Is that unfair? Not at all. For he says to Moses, 'I'll have mercy on whom I have mercy. I'll have compassion on whom I have compassion.' It does not therefore depend on man's desire or effort. It depends on God's mercy. Therefore God has mercy on whom he wants to have mercy. He hardens those who wants to harden." One will say, "Well, why does he still blame us who resists his will?" Well, actually, Esau did make real choices. Isaac made real choices. But more than that, verse 20, "Who are you, O man, to talk back to God? Shall what is formed to him who formed it say, 'Why did you make me like this?' Does not the potter have the right to make out of the same lump of clay, some for noble purpose, some for common use?" God has humanity before him. He has made humanity. And he has the right to use some for this and some for that. That is the message of tonight. God is God. I'm not God, God is God. You're not God, God is God. He's a real God, a competent, omnipotent, all-powerful God. He's not insipid, he's not incompetent, he's not off on the sideline wringing his hands in despair, unable to do anything about it. God is in charge, controlling, directing history, bringing about his purposes. And if God chooses to bless Jacob, that is God's prerogative. But I have this swelling up inside me saying, but Jacob's a rat. Do you have that sense? But don't you have that? But Jacob's a rat? It's not just me who feels that, but Jacob's a rat. Whenever I think that, I need to think, but Dominic, you're a rat too. And don't argue that point too loudly, because you might find it coming back to bite you. And I am so thankful it doesn't depend on my goodness, because I am a rat. What it depends on is God choosing me. Well, I've got a last point from Esau. But before I give you that, do you want to ask a question or make a comment this evening? Craig. Craig's pointed out that one of the last quotes there was Jacob I loved, but Esau I hated, and I noted that the decision of God to love Jacob was not dependent on Jacob's good character, because Jacob was a rat. And Craig's question is, and if I get the question wrong, just come back at me, mate. Craig's question is, was his decision to hate Esau also due to works, also due to Esau's life? Is that a fair enough summary? Well, you can certainly say that his decision to hate Esau was due to works, because Esau is also a rat. In fact, all humanity are rats, in that we've all rebelled against God. So the default is to be rejected by God. What the extraordinary thing is, when God actually decides to love anyone. So, I mean, say tonight, pull out my wallet and pull out $1,000 and give it to Craig. Now, you can't go home and say, hey, it was unfair at church tonight. Only Craig got the $1,000 from Dominic. Well, no, none of you deserve $1,000 from me. But if I choose to give it to Craig, well, that is my prerogative. But none of you deserve it. That is what all of us deserve, the judgment of God. None of us deserve the friendship and the love of God. But God, in his sovereign mercy, chooses to bestow his favour on some. And if he's chosen to bestow his favour on you, then don't argue against it. Say thank you. The question is, do we know anything about the system of blessing? It seems like it's just a cultural thing, but what is it about the blessing that is so binding? Fair summary there? First of all, blessing is the opposite of cursing. So blessing, in general, is you could curse somebody or you could bless someone. Bless is to bestow favour on, curse is to curse. Technical term. But it does seem culturally there's a very big issue about the dying father's last words to their children. And it's like the last... it's a verbal version of the last will and testament. So, the one I looked at a little bit further on is when Jacob dies and calls around his 12 sons and bestows his blessing on all of them. And so at that point, I tell you, Jacob's actually decided, I'm going to play fair here. And you get this, you get this, you get this, you know. But you can't undo it. just like you can't undo the will of somebody in our culture. It's a signed, sealed, done thing. Guy. Is there a point that this was all done around deceit? It does play out a little bit further in that when Jacob goes to Laban and he notices Laban's very pretty daughter Rachel and sees she's gorgeous, and he says, I want to marry your daughter. And he says, work for me for 7 years and you can marry her. And so it's a big night. They get married in the morning. Jacob wakes up. And it's not Rachel, it's her older sister Leah. And he is just, I've worked 7 years for you. And he goes and he has a showdown with his new father-in-law. And he says, it's our custom, older daughter gets married first. And but you can have Rachel in a week if you work for me another 7 years. And so he agrees and works for Laban for 14 years. And the deceiver is deceived by Laban. But, I mean, so there's that kind of deceptions rampant in the whole place. But the big lesson for me is the royal family is a pack of mongrels. And it's always, I mean, a couple of weeks ago we were thinking Lot. He was a scumbag, wasn't he? But righteousness is not about being morally beautiful. Righteousness is about, do you trust the promise of God? And so, I mean, I stand before you as somebody who isn't morally beautiful, but somebody who trusts the promises of God. And I think it is enormously comforting that the royal family are a pack of ratbags, because I am just like them. Yeah. There's one over here. Last one from Bruce. Why are they allowed to have more than one wife? And when did that change? What I have noticed is that the Bible never speaks positively about having more than one wife. But there are a number of negative things done in the Bible that are not condemned. As I have read carefully, I've discovered every time there is the occasion where one of these Bible figures has more than one wife, life turns out to be disastrous. It just gets messy, complex, it's just awful. Whereas the blokes who actually have one wife, they do fairly well. When you get to the New Testament, it's clearly commanded, only one wife. And that is held up as the model between Christ and the church. And a slight digression, what do you do with someone, and it doesn't really happen in our Western society, but what do you do in Africa when the gospel goes into a new cultural group and somebody who has three wives comes to Christ? What's the pastoral word for the missionary as he leads this flock? Well, I actually take it as to be faithful to the promise that you made, but don't take another one. And very clearly it's taught in the New Testament that the Christian leader must be the husband of but one wife. Yeah, that's probably as far as I can go on that, Bruce. Let me give you my conclusion. If the first lesson for us is from Jacob, second lesson for us as we go home tonight is from Esau. Come with me to Hebrews in the New Testament, Hebrews chapter 12, sentence 14. This is where we're going to land and finish tonight. Hebrews 12, sentence 14. Make every effort. Hebrews 12, sentence 14. Make every effort to live in peace with all men and to be holy. Without holiness, no one will see the Lord. See to it that no one misses the grace of God and that no bitter root grows up to cause trouble and defile many. See to it that no one is sexually immoral or godless like Esau, who for a single meal sold his inheritance rights as the oldest son. For Esau, there was something more important to him than the blessing of God. And in the end, the immediate sensual satisfaction of lentil soup was more important to him than the inheritance rites. I think we need to focus on this tonight, because if you are Christ's, you have a right of inheritance. If you are Christ's, you have an entry pass to heaven. And that is a gift. It's not a right. It's an extraordinary blessing from God. And so the word of God comes to us tonight. See to it that no one is sexually immoral or godless like Esau, who for a single meal sold his inheritance rights as the oldest son. One moment, one meal, one bowl of soup. And he walked away from it all and he couldn't get it back. Verse 17, afterwards, as you know, when he wanted to inherit this blessing, he was rejected. He could bring about no change of mind, though he sought the blessing with tears. What is soup in your life? What's soup of the day at your restaurant? What is more important to you than the blessing of God? Nothing. You say that, don't you? What, is it a man? Is there a man in your life? A woman in your life? I met a lady this week at a conference I was speaking on. She's the mother of a girl who used to be part of Christians in the Media. And her daughter had just celebrated her second anniversary of living with the son of Barry the Hittite. Living with this man. He has no relationship with God and is totally opposed to the things of God. And she, as a result, has not been with us, not been with the people of God since a couple of weeks after she met him. Soup of the day for her is her non-Christian boyfriend. She has walked away from the blessing. She has walked away from the promise of eternity with God for something as transient as him. And that is a massive source of grief to her mother. He's not worth it. He's lentil soup. She's abandoned heaven for a 65-cent packet from Aldi. It's not worth it. Or let me ask another point, because this is pastorally very close to home for some of us. Is soup of the day in your life work? My observation as pastor of this church is that many of us are driven people. There's not an insignificant percentage of us who are driven towards the lentil soup of work and who hence stand the chance of missing out on the blessing of God. We know in our hearts that God doesn't want us to eat it. We know in our hearts that this is crazy to be living for this company. And yet we just can't put the soup down. That bloke, that McDonald's bloke, found another quote from him from Ray Kwok. He said, "I believe in God, family and McDonald's. And then I go to work and I reverse the order and I live for McDonald's, family, God." Actually, that is what his life is all about, McDonald's. Pathetic, isn't it? Living for a Big Mac, living for a plate of lentil soup. Ray Kwok is kidding himself. In his whole life, it is McDonald's first. And if you make the best Big Mac in the world and you miss out on your inheritance, you've sold it all for 65 cents from Aldi. It's not worth it. What is dragging you away? Are you being dragged away from the promise of God by work? One spoonful of soup at a time. Run from it. Change it. I mean, is work honestly for you ahead of God, or is God ahead of work? There's a lot of good things about this church, but I think we have the potential for a massive blind spot here. I think this is serious. I want to put this on the table for us for discussion over supper. What is it in your life? Is your life God, family, McDonald's, or McDonald's, family, God? Is your life God, family, Fairfax, or Fairfax, family, God? Is your life Rupert, family, God, or God, family, Rupert? Is your life God, family, finance company, or finance company, family, God? Is your life God, family, teaching, or teaching, family, God? over supper, let's have some real, raw, honest sharing. Because for some of us, eternity is at stake.